Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Rose City Politics. It is May the 18th. We are watching the months, just sort of fly by. Who would have thought that we'd be here right now? Well, I guess that's the way it goes. I'm John Lidke. So happy to be with you tonight. We also have Doug Sartori. Oh, Doug, you're just coming from a generic Windsor background.
Generic Windsor background. Okay, so I get to mock you for this week now, because you did it. I love the radio guy thing where you're like, time's passing, guys. Hey, a minute ago. I think that's the best. Just love it. And you're so good at it too, man. You're getting all the reps on the other station, right?
I'm doing it. I actually had someone that commented on the texting platform on AM800 today who went, you don't need to say AM after when you say what time it is. We all know it's the morning. You sound like an amateur.
I love that.
My favorite one was Dan's birthday and people bitching at you for wishing Dan a happy.
Oh, yeah. So I definitely did spend the rest of the morning being like, it is 11:14 a.m. In case you think you're on the other side of the world. I just like, what are you doing that this is what you're upset about?
John's our own Howard Stern here in Windsor.
The most mild-mannered Howard Stern that could be.
And I'm seeing myself in my Zoom screen and realizing that today is like, I have the perfect Phil Donahue 1974 hairdo going. And it's awesome. Just exactly what I was going for.
You got the sweater with the collar and the hair. It's all coming together really well.
You got a little Griffin going on if you go back far enough.
Yeah, I just need to book Charo for next week and then we'll be all set.
Well, we're so happy to be here. We got Doug Sartori. We have Don Merrifield Jr. Don, how you doing? You're doing well.
I'm good. It's 5:21 p.m. here at Rose City Politics.
Don't tell them the real time. They can't know.
We live in a timeless void, Don.
That's right. Yeah, well, you don't have to tell me.
Well, we're so glad to have all of you here. If you're listening and you're not a Patreon subscriber, head over to patreon.com/RoseCityPolitics. We would love you to support us. We're in BizX Magazine at bizxmagazine.com on all of your favorite podcasting social media apps. And as always, Rose City Politics is able to broadcast live on tape thanks to the kind support of Leuna 625, building better communities.
Hey, before we start the show, John, how does it feel to be on AM800 and not have to grovel for money every 30 seconds on the air like you do here?
It's different, right? I mean, it's not so much groveling. It's just like every 7 minutes I have to stop talking. And then we go into commercials and stuff.
It's like outsourced groveling.
Yeah, it's outsourced. I get like a little bit of a downtime, which is not too shabby if I got to admit it. It's different though here. I don't like it. No one's happy about it. You know what we could do? We could get rid of all of this. If you're the kind of person who wants to sponsor the entire show where we only have to say it once a month and you're cool with that kind of a thing. I'm thinking maybe a Tepperman's or
chapter two
brewery.
Zekelman.
We could
rebrand the Zekelman Politics podcast.
That's right. Now with 30% less crazy.
I'm just saying the opportunities are there. If you're looking to buy us, we are for sale.
But we love you, Leuna.
Yeah. Yep, we love Leuna. Absolutely. It's great. And
we could be the Leuna Zekelman Hour.
We could. And if they would send us some shirts and hats, we could look like NASCAR drivers while we do the show.
Yeah.
Rob.
River Bookshop. I mean, the possibilities are endless, guys.
100%. Hey, I think the River Bookshop one is, it's quite frankly within our realm of possibilities.
We could rebrand. What is Amherstburg's nickname?
I would say the best small bookshop town in Canada.
Oh, Windsor Essex Politics.
Anyways, it's great to be here with you folks. We've got a real good show that we're going to be getting to tonight. We got four topics. I'm actually going to tell you what they all are because I'm going to hold us to it. And I'm not because I probably.
Yeah, can't. That's the spirit.
Let's though dive in with the 2022 Windsor election watch. Where are we at? First weekend on May 4th, we knew that Ernie Lamont was running for mayor. He ain't the bacon man no more. Ernie Lamont. Ugh, I don't know. Who's going to vote for a guy that's not going to become mayor bacon man?
He should have went like full opposite branding, like Sir Ernest Lamont the Third.
That would be good. He could also have gone like with like a vegetarian option.
True.
So we had him. Darcy Reno, friend of the pod, had registered in Ward 1.
Also loves bacon.
Also loves bacon. Ward week 2 on May 11th, we had Eric Reno, who had registered himself to be running, former school board trustee. And then, of course, Ward 7, Greg LeMay. And this week, week 3, we have Dylan Graves running in Ward 6. So there is a quick update for you guys. Oh, excuse me. Benjamin Daniluk is running in the mayoral spot as well. That didn't follow through. Benjamin Daniluk. Do we know anything about him, Benjamin? Yes.
See us all furiously Googling on.
Wait a minute. Right? Wait a minute. Okay. Never mind. I was looking up Dylan Graves and there is some pretty juicy stuff, but it's not Windsor.
Tell us anyway.
Oh, well, okay. So on the Google results.
Well, that's not fair. You can't tell us some negative things about someone else.
Earlier this month, Dylan Graves, 28, visited a tattoo shop to cover a swastika tattoo. Nice. And I was like, whoa, okay. This is breaking news here. But no, that is not Windsor Dylan Graves. That is not Ward 6 Dylan Graves. That's some guy in Minneapolis.
And he's also apparently some surfer who is endorsed by the Vans Corporation. So, yeah, there you go.
There's like an Instagram influencer by that name. Who knows? Maybe that's our Dylan.
Could be.
We look forward to meeting you, Dylan.
Yeah, well, come on the show, please. I mean, I hope this is probably a great start for it.
John is just wishing he was back on AM800 right now.
AM800.
That was it, though? I thought there were some other names that nobody else registered.
No, that was it. I didn't see anything else. Benjamin there. Ward 1, Darcy Reno still. Ward 4, Eric Reno. 6, Dylan Graves. 7, Greg LeMay. And then we're not talking about school board trustees because...
Okay.
That's just, I mean, we'd be diving into a crazy well if we were to do that at this point.
We've hosted trustee debates the last two elections.
Well, I presume that we're going to do like a full dive into it.
Get your questions ready.
Oh, yeah. I'm ready. I actually hosted a school board trustee
earlier today on AM800. There was a lot of questions that could have been raised about the other meeting. But.
You won't, man. They totally were. That was wild. Anyways, that's what you get on Rose City Politics After Dark. If you want the special podcast where we do all of the real deep dives, you have to give us money and we'll start recording it. We would love that. Let's talk about some of these topics here. We're going to dive in first to Ojibwe Shores. The property's been secured for a future national urban park in Windsor, one step closer to reality with the federal government having secured these lands, with Transport Canada signing an agreement last Thursday with Parks Canada. This will see the Windsor Port Authority transfer the 33 acres of land over to Parks Canada for the eventual inclusion in an Ojibwe National Urban Park. Eric Kuzmerchik talked about this with Patty Handysides on AM800. See, there's a little bit of a promo I can do. I can say that. And this is something big. We've been looking at this, you guys, for a number of years. Of course, Brian Massey's been pushing for this, at least for the past decade. And it's, I guess it's a pretty big deal that it's actually going to be happening here. I love these areas. I often go for walks in the Black Oak Heritage Park area, which will now be part of this. And, you know, I try to imagine what it'll be like once this is a full national park with the maintenance that's going to be taken care of by them. Doug, what is your take about this one? Are you for it? Are you against it? Don't be a stick in the mud.
I'm pretty neutral on it, to be honest. You know, I think, and I recognize this is a pretty popular idea, initiative, and that lots of folks are excited about it. But I give you the facts on this show, folks, and the facts are that I could care less either way. I think that Windsor in particular is well served with parks. We have a lot of beautiful parks, lots of nice wooded areas to visit and enjoy. It's certainly not a bad thing. It's, you know, I'm not prepared to campaign against it. It doesn't stir my heart when we get a national urban park getting closer to reality, but that's okay. Not everything has to be something I like.
Doug Sartori, ANSI Parks. Don, what's your take on this one?
Well, on the park issue, you know, I love nature. Unlike Doug, he wants to pave everything. So obviously I'm a pro park. So full disclosure, David Cree, who was the former head of the Port Authority, is actually a family friend. So I know him kind of well. So I might have some differing opinions on this. I think what's important to understand, do we need another park? I'm kind of with Doug on this. Is that property as valuable as the Grand Canyon, like people are making it sound like? I don't think so. What it is, though, it was a huge economic opportunity for the Port Authority to expand their services and expand, you know, economic development and just that whole business model in the area by, you know, obviously expanding the facilities that they had there. So I think a big piece of this whole transition from the Port Authority to whoever's chain of command is that they are looking for other port lands that the Port Authority can develop, because I do think that's important just economically. I don't think people really, you know, we talk so much about the auto industry here. I don't think people understand how big an economic driver the Port Authority is in this area. So I think it's good that they're going to, again, I'm 50-50 on the park. I don't care. I think it's important that, you know, the Port Authority gets some land that they can develop it to set up their expansion, which would help the whole community. And I guess I have a question for you guys. John brought up at the beginning of this that Brian Massey has been working on this for years. And during that time, nothing really happened. And we all know friend of the show, Kieran McKenzie, worked for Brian Massey for a long time. Is it any coincidence once he was gone, this file finally moved forward and got completed?
You'll have to ask Kieran the next time we have him on the show if he chooses to come on. But I'm gonna pick up on Don's bad joke mocking our friend and kind of transition to talking about the politics of this, because one thing I think is really interesting is when there's a good idea, and you know, Don and myself being kind of cold on it doesn't make it not a good idea, and there's something that people are excited about, and when it starts to become a thing, then every politician in town has to wrap their arms around it, and they're you get this sort of undignified race to get in front of it and make it your own. And we certainly have seen that play out with federal politicians as well as the mayor trying to grab a piece of this initiative and make it their own. You know, the National Urban Park inexplicably is part of the platform for Windsor in the provincial election. You know, so there's definitely like an effort for everybody who possibly can to brand themselves with this thing. And one thing, you know, you won't hear me often extolling the virtues of Brian Massey. You know, since I got to this city, I've been campaigning against him year in and year out. So take this for what it's worth. But I will say this about the man. He has a nose for things that people care about and for issues that are going to capture people's imagination. You know, this is one of those things that I think, especially in the early days, when it was first being talked about, people kind of maybe scratch their heads a little bit about why this was something that Mr. Massey would be pursuing to the extent that he did and talking about to the extent that he did. But I think you can see from the efforts of everyone to put their stamp on this thing that it is a winner of an idea. It is something that people care about. It's something that people want. And there you go. He was there right at the beginning.
Yeah, I think this is, this is one of those low-hanging fruits, reasonably easy things to do. It took a while, of course, to get the private landholders to negotiate, and now the feds are involved with compensation for that. But generally speaking, I mean, we're talking about a park here, right? You're not talking about building something in environmentally sensitive lands. You're not talking about we want to put up a big fucking
Don't do that on the big show. You're right. You're shaming yourself there, John, and please don't stop. I think like that's a fair point. Like this is a bit of a layup, you know, politically. It definitely it has that flavor to it. And it's the best, you know, going back. So now I'm going to get a little deeper into my analysis of Mr. Massey's stuff. You know, I think the issues that he likes are issues where he can beat on the government of the day and take ownership of something that ultimately is an easy win when it gets delivered. So, you know, there is probably a bit of political calculation there. If it's something that you can be outraged about for a long, long time and then claim ownership over when it happens, then that's a Brian Massey issue.
Yeah, I'm not going to agree with you necessarily on that front, but I think generally speaking, you know, it is a very easy win. There's nothing really to...
John lives a lot closer to Brian.
Nothing to stand in front of people for this one. And generally speaking, like who's going to actually be on the other side of it? The one point that I do want us to touch on before we move on to the next issue, because we're trying to pack in four things in this hour, it would be, you know, Mayor Dilkins has, you know, repeatedly used this as part of the platform for Windsor. What do you think about the appropriation of something that you say, Doug, is, you know, a layup? And here comes the mayor, you know, trying to, I guess, double shame towards this or something.
Yeah, well, I think Mayor Dilkins is one of the latest people to the party on this. You know, there's no question that this is an issue that that he's kind of jumping in at the end on. I'm not exactly sure where, you know, what's driving this and, you know, why that intervention happened. Maybe Donald has an idea for us.
You know, election year, so every politician in the world comes out and claims ownership. So, you know, this is politics. Nobody cares. I want to know why John thinks he can just come to this show and slum it and start swearing when he doesn't do that at 9 o'clock in the morning on AM 800.
I'm not fired up enough in the morning is the only thing. What can I say?
Fair.
I feel comfortable. I'm with my friends here. On AM 800, I'm alone in a room looking around going, who let me in here? Who can help me? I need help.
Well, so to go back to the Drew situation, you know, him and council have kind of half-assed been kind of working on this for a while. They tried to swap some lands out and stuff. And, you know, I don't think this has been a huge issue for anybody except for Brian and the people who love that park. So the question I have, are they just going to leave it natural? Because the problem with the Port Authority, the pushback was always, well, there's a whole bunch of endangered blah, blah, blah in there and, you know, trees that are, you know, extinct or whatever. So are they going to, like, a typical Windsor park turned it into a golf course, or are they just going to leave it natural?
So I spoke with Eric, who's Maricik, about this, and actually it was pretty interesting. He said that this is going to be a completely holistic, made in Windsor solution from the governance aspect of it. There's the potential, if we recognize locally that we want First Nations to be the stewards, if we want one of our local environmental groups to be the stewards, if we want it to be a multi-party stewardship, that's available. The design will be a grassroots driven process, as will be the programming as well. So this will really be what it is that we want it to be. Now, having said that, of course, Don, I mean, Lord knows who I am. I'm very cynical. That means that it could very well just become like a
37% AstroTurf,
an old trolley car in a canal.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. The community said they just wanted to see more trolleys. We don't know what to tell you.
Put a parking lot in there.
We created the world's first natural urban trolley circuit. It's great. You're all going to love it.
I just want to say, in my 22 years of being back in Windsor, I have never seen a made in Windsor solution that has failed. So this can't.
Perfect. Get go.
So, I mean, listen, it'll be interesting. I look forward to the idea, though. I guess it'll be like a gated thing where, you know, just like Point Pelier and other urban parks, you drive through a gate and there will be the maintenance that is actually set up, and maybe we'll get some campgrounds around there, because that could be a really cool area actually to go camping, where you could see Zug Island on one side of things with like that weird lighting, but also have like a, you know, the like night
truckers.
The truggers on the
off the bridge, throwing paint under your head.
You know how, folks, I tried this, so hard.
This segment is fatally host. Wounded, John. Move on.
Let's move on. I try so hard to be like the nice host, and I just
this is why Doug and I never get the radio gigs. We're always just
yeah, here. Yeah. You're why, the best, John.
That's why I get it. Well, CBC, our friend, put out a story. Door is still open on the potential Windsor LG Chem plant. Whoop-dee-doo, Basil. Windsor's not out of the running, though, for this $2.5 billion LG Chem plant, said the company. The plant would supply the cathodes and other materials to the EV battery plant being constructed in Windsor by LG and Stellantis. Invest Windsor Essex CEO Stephen McKenzie said that LG Chem wouldn't be constructing the plant in Windsor over concerns with available energy supply. But on Monday of this week, an LG Chem spokesperson said, no, he never said that. This all stemmed, of course, out of, can we call him Premier Ford, the leader of the Progressive Conservative Party, Doug Ford, announced that his government, if reelected, which of course looks more than likely it's going to happen, would be funding energy in some form. We'll figure out exactly what that energy looks like, whether it's bringing more lines or bolstering the lines or using innovative solutions from the green system, or as Mayor Dilkins said, maybe I guess somehow dragging, you know, electricity like we're gosh darn electron from across the border in one form or another. Maybe we have a bunch of people strapping on some like superhero vests.
I got a great idea. Everybody in Windsor is always complaining about bike lanes. The biking contingent here just wants a place to ride their bike. Hear me out on this. We get a giant hamster wheel and we put all the bikers on the hamster wheel and they just pedal their little hearts out, hook that up to a generator. We're
Don Merrifield, everybody.
There you go.
You know, that's
cards
that's
in letters to Don Merrifield.
Okay, you know what, though? Honestly, like, that is on par as ridiculous as an idea as the zigzag bike lane was a couple years ago. Like, it's not any worse. It's just as inconvenient. Yeah. And maybe we can use that electricity to mine some Bitcoins, and we can get Jason Raynor back.
Yeah. Oh, man.
This is a full circle, 100% organic, made in Windsor solution right here.
Don, let's hear you.
Okay, let me ask you a question, because this is gonna be my short take on this. This is screaming politics. And how did Stephen McKenzie either get turned into the fall guy on this, either on purpose, or he was just kind of gonna be used as a stooge on this, or was he in on the scam? Like, something is wrong here, because you can't have the head of the development commission come out and say, this is screwed, we're never going to get it, and here's why, X, Y, and Z. And then literally days later, everybody, including the corporation, comes out and says, A, we didn't say that, B, that's not the problem. First of all, anyone who believes that a corporation like LG, which is a worldwide international, I think they're South Korean, is going to look at a project where it's going to cost them billions of dollars and not do the basic research of it. Hey, do they have enough electricity before even contemplating investing any money is a fool. So either Mr. McKenzie thinks we're all idiots because we can't figure that out, we'd think LG went, oh, gee, I didn't know. Or this is all a game, or he's the fool because he couldn't figure it out. What do you guys think?
So I think there's a lot of room for speculation, as you say, about what happened here. What I see and what, you know, you folks will know, because in our kind of pre-show chatter, for weeks, we've been scratching our heads and trying to make sense of this story. And as it's unfolded, it makes a lot more sense over time. It sure was strange to see those remarks from Stephen McKenzie initially, because you got to think that there are an awful lot of bids, opportunities, chances that don't come to fruition. You know, Don, you're in business, I'm in business. There's lots of deals that never go anywhere. It happens all the time, and it doesn't really mean anything when a deal doesn't go anywhere. If the, you know, if the stars aren't aligned, they aren't aligned, you move on to the next opportunity. So my point being that it seems strange to me to start talking about a bid that we lost. It seemed odd to me that the CEO of the Economic Development Organization, IWE, would go out of his way to talk about this in public and into a microphone and to reporters about losing a plant and the reasons why and how terrible it was. And then as the story evolved, you know, we started to, I think, see the shape of this thing that, you know, this was teed up so that Premier Ford could come to the rescue during an election campaign and you know, be dropping down barriers, smashing through all obstacles and getting it done for Windsor, you know? And I don't have any evidence to that, that that's the case, except to say, again, that behavior by Mr. McKenzie was really inexplicable at the outset of how this evolved. And then I think the other thing that's really weird about this story is this sort of light speed nature of it. As it's evolved over the course of a couple of weeks, this thing has evolved from we aren't getting the plant to, well, you know, this is what it would take to get the plant to why, you know, why is that regulator getting in the way of us getting the plant to, hey, the premier promises we'll get the power to get the plant to LG saying, what are you guys talking about? This is in consideration. And I think that part of why it's so easy to see the wires on this thing is that it has happened in such an accelerated fashion. You know, I think normally when you're trying to deploy a narrative and plant something in the minds of the public, you take a little bit more time with it. You act with a little bit more subtlety. You roll it out a little bit more gradually. But if all of this was in the service of you know, promoting the provincial government, then, you know, then there is a time limit and it all has to play out by early June or there was no point in doing it, right?
Do you think that this at all negatively can affect Windsor? Because let's look at it from LG's standpoint. They already made an announcement here. They're going to be doing the big battery plant with Stellantis. And I assume this was the second one or expansion on that one. They seem to be the only ones who are left in the dark in this whole story. Like, they were the ones who said, what are you talking about? Do you think that they can look at Windsor now and think, okay, these clowns like to play games. I don't want to get involved. We're a giant South Korean corporation that can go to any country in the world and do this. Why am I going to deal with a bunch of penny-ante politicians trying to use us for their reelection bids?
Let me flip it around and ask you this way, Don. Do you think that how much of a factor do you think that elected officials are in landing big investments in a community?
So the only thing politicians and locally on some level, I guess we did put up some cash, but it's basically financing and funding. The reality is, look, I have a friend who works at Stellantis somewhat high up in the organization, and we've talked about this. And we've talked about the third shift. We've talked about the electrification of the vehicles. We've talked about, you know, new models being put. These decisions are made years ago. So anytime you hear, especially with all the announcements that have come out, you know, we worked really hard. We got to see it. The businesses have made these decisions years ago. You can't stick a new car in a plant and put billions of dollars to change the infrastructure in that plant to build either electric vehicles or hybrid and say you're going to do it in a year and a half. That's not how it works. They're planning these things out 5-6 years down the road. Now, once you get to kind of the finish line and there's like 3 or 4 options they have, maybe that's where the politicians can make a difference. But as we all know, it really just comes down to dollars and cents with companies. They're not coming here because they think the mayor's a great guy or Premier Ford's a great premier. Because, you know, 2 years, 3 years now or down the road, they're not going to be dealing with these people. So they're just looking at it from a business decision. And these decisions are made and contemplated for years. These aren't done in 6 weeks.
Yeah. So I think that answers your question in reverse. I think that if you are a mega corporation, the antics of local elected officials probably don't surprise you. And I doubt that these shenanigans help or hurt the economic development in the community. I posed the question on social media a while back, and I'm going to pose it again and just let it hang for listeners to fill in for themselves. But I really think that if you go back and read all these stories and you read the quotes and you see who was quoted and who wasn't quoted and who stopped talking and who kept talking, I think there are some patterns that you can develop here. And I think going back to a question you asked earlier, Don, I do think that there were some folks here who, and this is all just speculation, of course, but I think there were some folks who were stage managing this situation for purposes besides generating the investment. And there were folks who were just trying to do their job and believing that everyone was acting in good faith and then getting taken for a ride. And I think you can kind of make your own judgments about who's who in this scenario if you, you know, if you kind of closely read the media stories. But ultimately, you know, what it sounds to me like is that the, you know, the whatever level of concern, you know, whatever level of risk and concern we had about the power supply to feed this particular plant, those concerns have magically evaporated. And it sounds like a good news story that there's a, you know, another big investment potentially coming to our community.
Do you think that with this whole situation, and the way it looks to me is that the Economic Development Corporation either played the straight guy, played the fall guy, or was just oblivious and kind of left out of the whole? Do we need them? Why do we have ACDEV if they're really just there to play the stooge?
Yeah, you know, I've talked about this before. I think they have actually an important role in our community, and I think they do important work. I certainly am happy to criticize anybody that I think, you know, needs it in my eyes. I've leveled my share of criticism at Invest Windsor Essex, but I think they're needed. And I think there are, I've worked with people there. I think that there are folks at IWE who do terrific, fantastic work. Their job is to be the inside sales team for the region. You know, their job is to grease the wheels, make sure that deals don't fall apart for stupid reasons, put the community in its best light. You know, and I think that that's important. Every community needs a team like that. I think the problem for IWE is not of their own making. It's that organization has become politicized. It's that organization has become a bit of a political tool, which doesn't help, I'm sure, the real work that they are trying to get done day in and day out. But this is how it is. My personal view is that the work that they do is important. And I really think that the governance of that organization should be looked at, because I think that the current setup is unusual. It's unusual for ABCs in our community, even for regional ones. I think it would be good to take a look at the way that most other organizations are organized and constituted and governed, and maybe get away from having two mayors and a bunch of people that they recruit as the governing board of this organization. I don't think it's working in its best interest. And I think reform of IWE governance would probably help to unshackle that good team from the political influence that is leveled on them, and would make them even more effective in serving our community.
There you go. That's kind of the point I was making, is they become, like, isn't there an economic division in the mayor's office, his own personal team? or I know there was under Mayor
Francis. There was some, it's interesting because I think we're going to see where the other shoe drops in this, on the city side. There, Windsor Works envisioned a team, an organization inside the city of Windsor that's pursuing economic development. And I think in a way that's envisioned as complementary to what Invest Windsor Essex does. And with the departure of Mr. Raynar, it's going to be interesting to see how that all plays out. I think that Mayor Dilkins really wants to kind of turn Windsor Works into a slogan and declare victory. And I'm not sure if there's still the appetite to fund those positions. If you remember some of the early signs of tension around the council table around Mr. Raynar, was his pushing and insistence on actually building out the organization that was, that was laid out as a response to the Windsor Works report. So I don't think we know the answer to that yet, but it bears some watching. Communities have their own economic development officers, but that city organization would be something new, and it'll be interesting to see whether it actually takes shape the way that it was envisioned in the early days.
Yeah, it just seems when, like, we all know what the political culture is like in this area. It seems if you're going to have what ideally sounds like it should be a complementary organization working together, I think given what we've seen for the last 10 years, it would almost be more adversarial where one is trying to trump the other for political reasons. So it's one side can take credit. And it just seems with this whole situation with LG, where ECDEV seemed like they were kind of left hanging in the wind, like they weren't aware of what was actually going on, would kind of tell me that they're kind of thought of as more of a political toy than anything else.
I agree with you on that. I don't know. It feels
are
like
you using the not John voice there? This is not the AM 800 guy.
This is not me. This is someone else. No, I mean, listen, it was, this whole thing just felt really weird for all the reasons that you guys have already touched upon here. And I just wonder if this wasn't planned. Negative story with the positive story that follows it. The idea of the, we lost out on this. We lost another 1,300 jobs, but how do you sell a story that says there's another LG facility to a populace that doesn't read past the headlines if they even have a subscription to the Windsor Star, right? The biggest problem being, we've already heard about this. We know, we got the new battery plant. And it's like, no, this is not the battery plant. This is the plant that makes the stuff that goes into the batteries at the battery plant. And it's like, I don't have enough time to pay attention to that. Well, how do you get a sizzle in a story like that? Well, tell us that you're not getting the 1,300 jobs. And I hope that I'm just being way too cynical. I hope that it's not actually something that played out this way. But I mean, in Windsor, am I remiss for even suggesting that this might be the kind of thing that would happen? Am I nuts, you guys?
No.
No,
go ahead. You're good, Don.
Okay, well, I was just going to say, look, if anyone's been paying attention for the last few weeks between the personal dynamic between Premier Ford and the mayor, there seems to be a whole lot of, I'm going to scratch your back for your reelection, you scratch my back for my reelection. There's a lot of, we're already hearing you need someone at the table, promotion of Premier Ford is saving us on all these problems, that mythical problems that seem to be arising for, LG and Stellantis and corporations like that. And I think for the rest of the year, because the municipal election is down the road too, after the June election for the province, there seems to be a lot of politics being played where, look, I'm going to do what I can to get you elected. If you kind of, again, scratch my back to help me get elected, and this is the game we're going to play. So I think there's a lot of games being played politically anyway.
Yeah, there's no question. And, I want to pick up on that because I was kind of surprised. And now this is super inside baseball because I'm crying about what topics didn't make the show. But I'm kind of surprised that Kimia's complaint about Ms. Mayor Dilkins' endorsement and Mayor Dilkins' endorsement itself of conservative candidates. I'm surprised that didn't make the list, but since we're kind of inching into that territory, I'm just going to carve out a little space to talk about it. You know, I think politicians are going to politician, and a lot of the stuff that we talk about when we talk about things that, you know, are political in nature and whatnot, this is the way the game is played. People do political favors for one another. Politicians, elected officials at different levels or at the same level of government form, coalesce around issues and try to, you know, I'll help you on this one, you help me on that one. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. That's how business gets done. And it's how you advance the interests of the community. And I think where a lot of the conversation around Mayor Dilkin's endorsement and Kemia's response to it, where I think a lot of that conversation fell short is that there's, you know, there, like many things in life, there's a way to do things. So there's a way to play the game with honorable goals. And then there is a, you know, a less honorable way to play the game. And I think if you're playing politics to advance the interests of your community, that's the argument Mayor Dilkins is putting forward in terms of, you know, the reasons for his endorsement of Doug Ford. My view, my cynical, admittedly cynical view, my view is a little bit different. I think that his endorsement of Doug Ford is a lot more about Mayor Dilkins' personal influence and how he can extend it and what he can, you know, what he can get for himself politically than it is about advancing the interests of the community. That's my personal view. So all of that to say that I don't think it's necessarily bad that political deals happen. But I, you know, I think that you've got to evaluate people's motives and rationale. And at the end of the day, ask yourself, is this actually moving the community forward, making the community better, or is it not? And that's a judgment that each of us has to make for themselves.
Yeah. When I made that statement that it's about political back scratching, look, we all know that's how it works. That's how the game is played. And look, I'm the first guy to sit here and be super critical of the mayor all the time. And a lot of times we're maybe it's misconstrued a little bit. A lot of times we're criticizing the politics, the outcome. Like the outcome that we got the LG plant is fantastic. Whether there's, you know, we can talk about the politics, we can talk about the money we had to throw, we can talk about all kinds of stuff that can cause controversy and things we don't like. At the end of the day, like you said, when you're playing the political game, if it benefits the community, it benefits the community. And that's just how the world works. It's like business. It's like anything else. So I'm not really being critical that they're, you know, playing buddy-buddy and helping each other out. I'm just commenting on the politics. And I think what you said is very important. If it benefits the community, we all know this is how politics is played. We might as well participate in the game, because Windsor, Essex County for decades was an outlier. We were always the screw you, we're going to stick it to the man type organization or type area, where we always fought against whoever was in power, because it was usually the liberals or the conservatives, and we were always NDP supporters. So it's, we're going to fight back, and we got nothing for it. So the political spectrum has changed a little bit, even with the Liberal Party when they were in power, and now with the conservatives, where there actually are people in the community and even some of the labor unions who are going, you know what? Let's play ball with who's there, because at the end of the day, I may not like it. Whether you like Premier Ford or not, or whether you like the mayor or not, is irrelevant. If it's benefiting the community, that's all that matters.
Yeah. So here's where I think the limit of that is, though. When you build a personal relationship with a politician, and you do a favor, and you hope to get a favor, and you hope that that advances your community, here's where I think the limit of that is. Mayor Dilkins seems entirely unwilling to level any kind of substantive critique on the Ford government. Even when this community is suffering, even when it is harmful to this community, not in the interest of this community, if it's Doug Ford doing it, he's going to keep his mouth shut. And that's what I was getting at when I was talking about, you know, whether it's about advancing the community's interests or whether it is about your own personal influence within the party you hope to that will form the next government. And that's, I think, the difference. And I think that that's the difference between conducting yourself in a way that advances the community and conducting yourself in a way that advances you.
Yeah, and I see that, but I think we see that. If you go around the council table, people have been on the show. I mean, we know what their politics are, and we know who they're out there campaigning for. So I feel like that happens on every level. Look, Kieran McKenzie obviously is an NDP supporter because he's worked for the NDP party. Reno Borland has run for the Liberals, so he's out there, thumping for the Liberals. And are they doing it because they think it's be better for the community, or do they think there's a political, payback for them? I don't think it's only the mayor, let me put it that way.
Well, I will say this, and then we'll let John have his show back. Sorry, John. Okay. But I'll just say this. I think in the case of the two gentlemen that you just mentioned who sit on city council, each of them were an identifiable partisan and an out and proud partisan long before they were elected municipally. And I think, you elect a Liberal, you elect an NDPer to municipal council. That's kind of baked in and you know what you're getting, and there's a consistency there. Mayor Dilkins has always played coy about his partisan allegiances. In fact, I think his partisan allegiances have shifted over time. That's not something I have personal knowledge of. It's just something I've heard. But him aligning himself with the Conservative Party and explicitly, openly, endorsingly is something that is relatively recent and comes long after he was elected. This is not something that was baked in. This is not something that people expected. He had a conversion. He's been converted into a fairly rabid conservative partisan in a very short time. So forgive me if I don't give the same leeway to him as I do to folks who I believe are partisans because of their principles and their personal views. Andrew Dowie is another great example of somebody who is a longtime partisan. He has been a conservative and a progressive conservative for many years. And got elected as a municipal councillor in Tecumseh, and now is of course running for the Conservatives in Windsor-Tecumseh. But Andrew Dowie is not somebody who just decided he was going to be a conservative because he could get something out of it. He's somebody who believes in those values, has those views, and has for many years, whether it was helpful to him or not at the time. That's the difference.
Yeah, I agree with that. I also understand that if you're a conservative in Windsor, we've been trained just to not to say too much because your car will get lit on fire.
Okay, John, for real, you can have the show back.
You can have it back now, John. We're done screwing. John's taking a nap. He had to get up at 5:30 this morning.
It was nice to just have to tune out for a little bit.
The longest commercial you ever had. Yeah, I ain't listening to this crap.
Yeah, did you guys say anything interesting? I wasn't paying attention.
Yeah, we were talking about Big Juice.
No, not again. Not again.
It's going to be the joke that keeps on coming back now. It's funny every time.
Yeah, I don't know. I still look at this one and I don't know. I feel like it was manufacturing consent here. Like, where's the sizzle? You got to find an angle for it. Take it away before they have it.
And I just feel bad for actually Mr. McKenzie at Best Windsor Essex because he got played as the fall guy in this or the stooge and that. I don't think he deserves that. What Doug, even though what I said, I do think that organization is important and we don't leverage it enough.
Yeah.
I was like coy about it, Don. You just come out and say it.
Well, more than that, I mean, who really came out? Oh, Gary McNamara. He was the one who came out and he said specifically, someone's panicking, they're tearing their hair out. And I was just like, oh no, Gary, did not get the phone call?
Tearing your hair out.
I really appreciate Mayor McNamara. I don't say that often enough.
I like him.
He's not flashy. He's a quiet, get it done kind of person, but when he makes a comment, when he chooses to intervene or comment on something, it's usually really well worth listening to and has a lot of layers to it. I really enjoy Mayor McNamara.
The nice guy. He's like a politician that you can tell it's almost like, I don't want to say a begrudging politician, but it's just like, he's just like, listen, what do you want from me? Like, I'm here, I'm doing it. Like, it's a small town. Like, I'm working hard. Like, It doesn't seem like there's games.
You guys are always nice to the liberals, and us conservatives show up for 5 seconds.
Okay.
Light us on fire.
Oh, I've got nice things to say.
Who's a liberal in this conversation?
Yeah, I don't know.
Gary McNamara endorsed Andrew Dowie in 2022 and Percy Hatfield in 2018. So yeah,
who does he vote for?
I don't know. That's secret, Don. My point is that
I thought you were hiding the voting machines in the last
in Kentucky. My point is that I hardly think that you could say that Mayor McNamara is a rabid partisan, considering he hasn't endorsed a liberal in a while, at least at the provincial level.
Well, it's Tecumseh. It's like being a conservative in Windsor. It just doesn't work.
Okay, we're going to change the subject. We're going to go into our rapid round right now. We got two last subjects that we want to talk to. This is a fun one. I'm going to have to rearrange this story here because I really don't like how it is presented. The Liberals came forward and said under Del Duca, they would upload the EC Row Expressway, something that I've been advocating for a while. Back when I was in university, I said it was very necessary to find a more equitable option for the expressway, either upload it or toll it, or just get rid of it. Then we don't have to talk about it ever again. Just get rid of it, replace it with canola fields, quite frankly. I don't care. We didn't go that route. But we're at a point right now where we have the Liberals brought it forward, saying that they would upload it. The NDP have jumped on board as well. Councillor Bordelon brought this forward in a motion in what, 2014-15, I think. Man, you really start to feel old when you realize things that were said, like, oh no, Doug's giving like a hard no, don't even talk to me about feeling old.
It's fine, you can do that, young man.
I feel it. This is an interesting one, though. I think that we definitely need to find a way to make the EC Row more equitable. Too many people from the counties in whichever direction are using it on a regular basis without having to pay for the upkeep of it. And it is, quite frankly, a regional, provincial road, whatever you want to chalk it up to be. So I love the idea of...
I'm just waiting to hear toll road. Come on, bring up toll roads,
Jeff. Oh, toll a gosh darn thing. Absolutely. If you don't have a license plate that's registered in Windsor, I think you should be spending at least $17 per trip on the EC Row Expressway.
If it was,
and I want $3 to go straight to Rose City politics because
now you're talking.
We're doing the hard work.
Look, at if it was funded out of provincial coffers, then it would be the first time in a long time that the county is actually paying its share of something. That Windsor is participating in. So that would be a good thing. The EC Row Expressway is a regional highway. Sure, it's mostly in Windsor, but its endpoints are provide access to county residents to get to the city. It makes a lot of sense, I think, for this to be a provincial responsibility. Kudos to Mr. Del Duca, who I do support and endorse for what it's worth, folks. Kudos to Mr. Del Duca for being open to the conversation. It's something that I think should happen. And what I thought really was curious about it was that Mayor Dilkins, here's a good example of being a, you know, kind of a crappy partisan as an elected official. Mayor Dilkins dunked on it, you know, on Twitter, made a point of undermining it and dunking on it in a response to a tweet from friend of the show, Melinda Monroe. Mayor Dilkins, when a surprising breach of social media discipline, responded to a critic decided to dunk on Del Duca and you know, undermine it and minimize it and talk about how it, you know, why didn't it happen before, et cetera, et cetera. If a politician proposes something that's good for your community, you are pursuing the best interests of your community, why would you do that? Why would you do that? You wouldn't. My point is, you wouldn't. And so this goes back to what I was saying before about being a principled partisan and carrying that baggage with you into municipal office. And being someone who is seeking the maximum personal gain, even if it means that they tie themselves into knots to justify their pronouncements on partisan matters.
All right, so I'm going to give two conflicting comments on this, and that's how my brain works, which is why I live alone at 54 years old. So,
Jesus Christ.
Would you want to live with me, Doug, as an adult? Come on, let's
be. Are you looking to live with someone who's 54 years old? Are you looking to move in with someone brand new? Have we got an opportunity?
That's right. So, why did I? Yeah, so on the topic of should EC Roe be sent back up to the province like it was originally, 100%. Everything Doug said was correct. It's our version of the 401 in Toronto. Everybody from Mississauga to north of the city. I'm trying to think of a town. Oshawa would use that.
There you go.
There we go. Oshawa all the way out to Barrie. I'm just getting my Toronto bearings back. It's been a while. So yeah, 100%, it should be uploaded. Now, here's where I think the politics is going to come in, and you guys are probably going to get mad at me because obviously I am of the three supporting Premier Ford in this. I think, I'm sure if you've listened to this show for years, I did not make it less than obvious that I thought the Wynne government was the worst government Ontario has ever had, second to Bob Rae. I don't believe anything coming out of Del Duca's face because A, he knows he's going to lose so he can promise the world. That's all he's got. He's already promised about $20 billion in new spending that he's never going to be able to pay for. So I think it's very similar to Andrea Horvath. Like the reality is, as John said at the top of the show, Premier Ford's probably going to get elected. And if you're going to buy these promises and say, okay, I'm going to elect this guy because he said this, based off of his record of being in the Catherine Wynne government, where they promised the world and did nothing down here. I think it's foolish. So I can understand Drew dunking on Del Duca, obviously for political reasons, because he's obviously supporting Premier Ford. But I would think history shows that's there. It would never happen even if he got elected. So
okay.
Here's my
partisan punch so in the face. We're not going to turn this into partisan crossfire. So I am going to leave those comments mostly untouched because that would be a whole other segment for me to rebut all the things that you said that were wrong. However, I am aware that you are a dedicated and longtime partisan of the Conservative Party. And that is why I respect you, because I know you say this stuff because you are deluded into believing it and not for personal gain.
Yeah, I am getting nothing out of this, trust me, except Gary McNamara's hairstyle. So.
Well, you guys, we did it. We did a show.
Yeah, it was a good one too.
We did a whole show. It was pretty funny. We had some.
Well, it was nice that we actually disagreed for a change, because usually we just come in here and all dunk on somebody a different way. So
how can we all roast someone as terribly as possible?
The roasting competitions are fun too. It's a nice change of pace.
Yeah.
This was nice. Well, you know, we've got a lot that we're going to be talking about moving forward, of course, with the provincial election coming up. We're probably going to do a full dive. But if you're listening right now, we will be broadcasting tomorrow the Center for Cities debate. They've got Windsor West and Windsor Tecumseh, all of the candidates locked down from all four of the major parties. That's the PCs, Liberals, NDP, and Greens, except for in Windsor West, where the PC candidate hasn't responded. Man, that's like, to me, that's I'll say it here. I didn't say it on AM800. That's embarrassing.
Has he done any media?
I haven't seen a thing.
Windsor West guy? I don't think so. Yeah. And again,
what's he hiding?
Well, when I was at the last secret meeting, this is what went down.
Yeah, what's the food that they serve at the secret meetings? Is this good, Don?
Usually puppies.
There you go. Okay, well, at least it's not.
It's all how you prepare them.
Well, you got to braise them first, and then after that.
It's... Well, I'm glad it's not exclusionary and it's not something like pork. At least I'm able to show up.
Yeah. I am not making any jokes on this show because it'll not end well.
Folks, we're having fun here. Rose City Politics. Glad to spend the evening with you. Hard to believe that it is the 18th. We're going to be moving forward next week. Sometime we're going to have to do our Ward Watch segment, Doug, on the mayor. We still have to do our mayoral wrap up on that one. So maybe we'll get to that at some point.
Yeah.
Who knows? Because I mean, it's good. It's useful.
Yeah, I agree. It's a little bit, I mean, I guess that mayoral Ward Watch episode would look like a demographic overview of the city and a conversation of citywide political trends. So now you've got me kind of juiced for it. So yeah, okay, let's do it.
Nerd. Hey, looking forward to it. I mean, it's always fun. I mean, I'm sorry. I saw you and you did just genuinely excited.
Like, I did. Well, what we can do is we can give Fraser Fathers like a 10-minute segment to explain the difference between Windsor and the Windsor CMA. that'll be some good radio.
Honestly, that's going to like bring in more listeners than we get on a regular week, especially
when we don't have sponsors, people.
We do have sponsors. We got great sponsors. One really good one who is always there for us. Again, hard to believe though. 18th of May. Thank you for being with us tonight, folks. This is Rose City Politics, our regular panel tonight, including myself, John Lidke. We had Doug Sartori, Don Merrifield Jr. We are in BizX Magazine at bizxmagazine.com, and we're on all of your favorite podcasting and social media apps. And Rose City Politics, thanks to that very kind sponsor, Leuna 625, we're able to broadcast live on tape every week. So thank you, Leuna 625. We'll be back next week with a show about some stuff. Looking forward to it.
PM
at 8 p.m.